not sick or struck dumb, or don't you know a kick when you see one can't quit? We're not done. We're gonna kick till the next one.
Hello, fine people, and welcome to The Kick. This is a movie podcast on the Now Playing Network, where we dream in themes and every genre is habit-forming. I am your host, Chance Solem Pfeiffer. We are right in the midst of our sports romance movie kick, and on today's show, it's a totemic mashup of the sports movie with the romance. In fact, you could argue it's never been done with more care or dimensionality than in today's film. And if I couldn't have booked a guest for today's show, this is one like, to even do the series at all, I would have had to lock myself in a room and just mumble about it solo. But luckily, we have a terrific guest. Here to discuss Love and Basketball is a writer, broadcaster, and journalist who hosts the Queens of the Court podcast with basketball legend Cheryl Swoops. She also hosts This Week in WCC Basketball on ESPN+, and just had a really cool piece published on Romper about Olympian runner Sonya Richards-Ross. I would recommend people read that. And she, like so many people, have loved the movie we're going to talk about today since childhood, and the shit won't go away. It's Jordan Robinson. Welcome.
Thank you. Incredible intro.
Oh, thanks.
Let's do this. My favorite movie. Yes.
Favorite movie bar none?
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, it won't go away. Just like you said, it's an all-time favorite. Just being a basketball player, being a rom-com lover since the very beginning, it just checks all of the boxes.
That's great. I was going to ask you if it was your favorite basketball movie, but let's just throw the basketball qualifier away. Favorite movie.
Yeah.
I love it. That's great. You wrote a terrific remembrance for the movie's 20th anniversary for The Ringer in 2020. And one of my favorite little nuggets in there is you mentioned being able to rap Light as a Rock twice on your way to every basketball practice as a six-year-old. Because the movies or the songs featured in the movie. Just, so does that mean you saw the movie at like age four, age five? When did you first see Love and Basketball?
Yeah, for sure. So I am the youngest of three. And so I have to give credit to my older sister for introducing me to way too much stuff that I probably should not have been watching at that age. But I loved basketball, and so hearing that there was a movie about basketball, and it was about a female who was playing basketball, I think even at that young age, I loved it. And not only do we have it on VHS, but we had the soundtrack as well. And so that is why I would force my dad to put the soundtrack in, turn to track six, and it was Light as a Rock, and I knew it. I am not going to wrap it for you today because that comes with an extra fee. But
sure.
It's always a good time, and I loved it since then.
Can I play?
All right, you and Kelvin against me and Jamal.
Oh man, he's a girl.
Girls can't play no ball.
Ball better than you. I'm gonna be the first girl in the NBA.
No, I'm gonna be in the NBA. You gonna be my cheerleader.
They play the same game.
If you don't start a bad attitude,
critical foul.
No one's gonna recruit you.
I'm a ball player.
With a jacked up attitude.
They share the same dream.
You'd love for him to play at USC like you did, right?
No, I'd love for him to get a good education.
I don't know why I keep hoping you'll grow out of this tomboy thing.
I won't. I'm a lesbian.
That's not funny.
Damn. You don't look half bad.
You either.
How about a little one-on-one?
What we playing for?
I score, you strip. Take it off. Take it off.
Oh,
strip.
All's fair in Love and Basketball, baby.
So Love and Basketball comes out in 2000. The narrative of the film unfolds in four quarters, four stages in the lives of Monica, played by Sanaa Lathan, and Quincy, played by Omar Epps. It's a saga that begins in 1981, when Monica's family moves in next door to Quincy's in the Baldwin Hills neighborhood in L.A., Their relationship begins as a rivalry. Monica's an 11-year-old Lakers fan who's dead set on becoming the first woman to play in the NBA. Quincy is the son of an NBA player, played by Dennis Haysbert. And like many 11-year-old boys, he doesn't believe the girls can play any ball. And so the first of Monica and Quincy's head-to-head games leaves Monica with a scar on her chin, a scolding from her mother, played by Alfre Woodard, and an unresolved conflict over who's the better player. We then follow Monica and Quincy to high school, where they're both star players at Crenshaw. Their rivalry turns to an unexpected yet fitting love story. They have history, clearly. Then they go to USC, where the disparity between how they love the game becomes more apparent. Monica is the scrappy, maniacally focused upstart. She's playing for a legendary college basketball program, but receiving nowhere near the attention of Quincy, who's sort of the promised prince in a family basketball dynasty. And that disparity, as well as their family dynamics, tests their love, tests their bond, in some ways breaks their bond, all the way into quarter four, where we find them in adulthood, wondering, you know, what's become of our childhood dreams? And they have just one more game to play. Other things I might mention would be that this is the debut directorial feature and the debut screenplay from Gina Prince-Bythewood, in what has to be one of the most ambitious debut movies. I can't believe this is somebody's first film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not at all. And when you hear the story about how she wrote this, you know, it was about 4 years in the making for someone to back her up and give money for this project. And she was just so dead set on it. Like, this is what I'm going to do first, because it was her story.
Yeah.
Similarly. And she, yeah, it didn't have a big box office opening. Not a lot of people like ran to the movies to see it. Yeah. So I wonder, I didn't get a chance to ask her this, but just like thinking back, did she feel like it was a successful first movie? I think now we say, like, how is that such a great first movie? But when it first came out, it wasn't too successful. It grew over time, and especially word of mouth too.
Right. And it is very Monica of her to just be maniacally focused on making this movie the way she wants to make it for 5 years.
Sure.
That's the reason it got done.
Sure.
Supporting cast has Gabrielle Union, Tyra Banks, Regina Hall. And I would say, just the last bit of table setting, you have a movie that's funny, it's melancholy. The drama is both like quietly observant and very fiery at times. It's seemingly made with basketball authenticity wherever possible. And it becomes a groundbreaking rom-com for women's sports and Black love in Hollywood movies. Jordan, I want to start with one of the theses of your remembrance from the 20-year anniversary is just about Monica, the character. Why is she such a beloved and important movie character?
Oh, what a great place to start. I think it's because, and I think you could just tell that Gina wrote Monica from a very personal experience. And I think growing up as a girl who loved to hoop, you just feel seen. And there was not a character up until that point for me, in sports movies especially, where it was like, okay, this is really about basketball. This isn't like, oh, we just so happen to play basketball and it's an extracurricular activity. No, like, this is my life. And she really captured the tomboyness and also the struggle to be competitive, and we're being told to guard our temper. Like, I don't know how many times I was told to, oh, you're a girl, don't get too frustrated, don't get a tech. Like, all of those things were really captured. But then also, you still have to go through womanhood and go through relationships with your mom, with your dad, with your older sister. Like, there was just too many things that were on the nose, specifically for me and so many other young Black girls who liked basketball growing up.
You, as you already alluded to, talked to Gina Prince-Bythewood for the piece that you wrote. Mm-hmm. Was there anything from your interview with her that made you see the movie differently after you'd presumably already seen it 100 times?
100 million times. It was so many things. I mean, first I just had to totally fangirl at the beginning and just be like, Gina, this is my favorite movie ever. Thank you for creating this movie. But there were so many things. There was some nuggets like Sanaa Lathan and Omar Epps were actually dating at the time in real life. And they had already done a few movies together, but Sanaa did not say that they were dating. And Gina was like, that was the smart thing to do, because I don't think I would have casted her. Because what if they would have broken up? Like, what if they would have gotten into a fight or something? That would have ruined the whole chemistry of the movie. So they were dating at the beginning and at the end. And I think the biggest one was, because you talk about Monica as a character, it's just, it always had to be Sanaa. Like, it just fits her perfect, and you always imagine her. But it was originally going to be Nyasha Butler, who was a standout basketball player from New York. She was already living Monica's life, and she was at Georgia Tech, a freshman, breaking records, freshman of the year, all these things. But because she wouldn't been able to get paid, because of NCAA rules, she wouldn't have been able to get paid during the promo. And I just think of NIL deals now.
Yeah.
Down one, down one. Come on, come on. D.I., D.I., Ma. Watch the ball. Watch the ball. Watch the ball. Now. Don't blow this. Watch it. Take it right. Watch left. Watch left.
What do you, as someone who covers sports professionally and was a college basketball player and played basketball your whole life, what do you think of the way that Gina Prince-Bythewood like visually captures the game?
Talking with her, she said it was so important to have people who actually played basketball. I think the only other women's basketball movie comp, unfortunately, is the Disney Channel original movie Devil Team.
I know it well.
And they had never touched a basketball in their life, and you could tell it was awful. And she told me that anytime a woman or a young girl was on screen playing basketball, they just gave her a basketball and said good luck. Mm. And it really felt like it set women's basketball players back. And so when they're at Crenshaw High, that's the real team. Like, those are real basketball players. And she auditioned people who actually, over 700 players, to actually play basketball. And I loved the first person point of view, where you see someone playing defense and you see Monica actually crossing someone over, or Quincy. The whole movie isn't really about the X's and O's and the on the court basketball things, but I think she did a really great job portraying it as real as she could.
Do you think that when it goes first person for Monica, it's just like the camera's just like whipping side to side. Do you feel like that is like a realistic portrayal of like what it's like as a defender to have your head on a swivel in the middle of a game?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was, you know, just the defender smacking the floor, guarding her, talking trash the whole time. Like, that is exactly what's going on. And every time I watch that, that's what gets me the most excited, probably.
Yeah.
Because it feels like you're the one playing. You have the rock in your hand. I think that was purposeful. And somebody who really loves and knows the game, you could tell through that camera work as well.
We probably don't need to talk very much about the Disney Channel original movie Double Team, but I just wanted to say the Ali shuffle, which is a travel, like any way you do it. So
very much so.
It's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much shame. We didn't have a lot chance. We didn't have a lot for girls basketball movies, unfortunately.
I was kind of struck on this rewatch, the way that Quincy and Monica kind of struggle with their relationship freshman year at USC, of like what it means to support each other and still be really focused on each other's games. Like, that felt like a very lifelike conflict that, even if in theory people are like, what you're doing is just as important as what I'm doing, in the moment when people have to pick one or the other, that can be really tough. I'm curious, do you feel like those disagreements in like athlete couples from what you've witnessed ring true?
Absolutely. You know, my freshman year playing basketball, I was not in a relationship anymore. But I think it captures the balance. Like, it's so hard to go away to college and try to balance life and then also be an athlete. I think about it all the time. Like, how did I survive? Mm. How did I do that for 4 years? Like, it seems impossible when you're trying to get a degree and be about ball and have a social life and do this and, you know, be a part of your campus and all of these things. And just being a student athlete is one very rare thing that a lot of people don't get a chance to do, but it is really hard to do. And I think she captured that really well, because you feel like this sport is your job now. You're on scholarship. You are technically, even though I was before the NIL era, but you are being paid to be there because they are investing in you to be a part of your team. I think also Monica wanted to be really good at her craft, and she wanted to follow the rules and wanted to, you know, not break curfew and all of those things where you're a freshman. All of that is new, and you're tired and you're sore and you're gaining the freshman 15. Like, it's all of those things. And having a relationship on top of that, that you really want to work and you really want to both be about ball, it seems impossible. And so I think Gina did a really good job of trying to capture that.
Have you ever seen it work in real life where people who are both athletes are in a successful long-term partnership? Do examples come to mind?
I feel like I have interviewed athletes before. I just interviewed Sonia Richards Ross, and she was a track athlete at Texas, and he was a football player at Texas. And I feel like I've heard of it, but I don't have a firsthand example of where it was working out, because it is so hard.
Yeah.
And you want, to me, being a me personally being a perfectionist, I want to be great at all of these things, and I don't want anything to slip. And so sometimes it could feel like, oh, well, now I'm slipping in basketball and my relationship is doing well, which was portrayed in the movie. Our relationship's bad. Now on the court is bad. My shot is off and I'm having problems at home. Like, all of that seems to kind of blend together, especially when you are a young adult on your own for the first time.
Can we talk?
Talk to your new girlfriend.
Look, I took the whole of Burger King.
Cheap date.
You she had time for me.
So you messed around to prove a point?
What'd I just say? No, you got your head so far up your ass, it took a cheap date for you to notice me.
What cue, man? Did I forget to kiss your ass like everybody else?
You forgot to be there.
That night you wanted to talk about your dad. I had curfew. What was I supposed to do?
Stay.
If I stayed, I wouldn't be starting.
Well, at least you got your priorities straight.
I never asked you to choose.
You never have to.
I'm a ball player. If anybody knows what that means, it should be you.
If basketball is all you care about, why are you boning me? Why don't you bone Dick Vitale?
This is also like a very generational movie. Like, the parents and their impact on their kids matter a lot. And it's a bona fide coming of age movie, of course, as you move through the four different stages of life. Are there parts of it, Jordan, that you watch differently now than you did when you were a kid?
I definitely feel like the mom daughter relationship.
Yeah.
Think that is something that I think of a lot, being really close to my dad because he was my coach and he trained me, and I was, you know, playing with my brothers and playing with the boys, and my mom was a cheerleader and wanted me to be a girly girl. That's my nickname at home. And it was sometimes a disconnect of my mom literally saying to me, it's just a game. Like, it was just a game. And I'm like, what?
Last thing you want
to
hear.
How could you say that? This is so much more. And I'm going off and on about that. And so I think that part of it, I definitely look at. And I also look at the freshman basketball experience, because that, watching that movie, going to play in college, I thought that's what it was going to be like. I thought it was going to be tough at first, but then you're going to have this redemption arc, and then you are the woman on campus, and you're going to be able to overcome, and you take the spot, and you took a senior spot. You're the point guard, all of this. That was not my college experience. I did not play a lot, and it just kind of stayed steady. So I was like, dang, I really went in thinking it was going to be exactly like this movie, and it was not for me. So I think both of those things I look at differently.
That makes sense. when I think back on your wonderful podcast, Spinsters, one of my favorite episodes was you and Haley kind of debunking the myths around women dunking. And I wonder, what do you make, or what do you think the audience should make of the final bucket in the climactic game for your heart? You know, Quincy, you know, bumps Monica out of bounds, just call back to the beginning of their very first game, but then dunks it. Do you feel like there is like is there meant to be like a sting or a significance to that, do you think?
A little bit. Yeah. I think it very much was, I can do this and you can't.
Yeah.
It was a exclamation point on the conversation, especially because up until that point, he made it clear that he didn't want to be there and you woke him up and let's get this over with. So let me dunk on you to prove a point, essentially, which, complete side note, I saw today on Twitter that Anthony Edwards just had a crazy dunk in a game the other night, and someone made a meme of it saying, Monica, I'll play you for your heart, and Q doing this type of dunk. Like, first of all, this movie is iconic. We are always going to talk about it every single day, but that goes with it, right? Like, it was very emphatic of, let's get this over with. And then we know that he wanted double or nothing because he really wanted her. But
yeah.
Okay.
One of the things, of course, anytime you do podcasts about 8 sports movies in a row, the training montages are great. So we're going to do a little lightning round here of like montage questions.
Okay. Great.
Jordan, you've seen a lot of basketball games. Have you ever seen a game won on a charge like Monica does in that USC game?
You know, I don't think so. Not one comes to mind, especially the drama of it. It was an and one. Like, it would have really won the game, right? Am I remembering that right?
You are,
the ball went in. They wave off the basket and call a charge.
Yep.
I have not seen that. It was perfect drama, because come on, that just doesn't happen.
But it also feels like it could happen, right? Like,
it definitely could happen
in any game.
It definitely could happen. Very bold ref would need to make that call, but
yes.
I have not seen it, or I'm just not remembering one that comes to mind.
You need a ref who truly doesn't give a damn. What's your favorite little moment from Love and Basketball that only like a real devotee could pick out?
Oh, I would, besides knowing all of the words, I would say at the high school homecoming, where Monica goes and she goes with the college guy. The dances that they're panning over the crowd.
Yeah.
I could mimic like each of those dances before they get to the person doing each move.
Yeah.
Like, I could mimic it. I know what dance is coming.
You do the dances the extras are doing.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The extras in the background as they pan over the gym. I can do those dances. But I want to say, too, when you were giving the synopsis, that the music in this film is what is another incredible. I had the soundtrack because the music was so good.
Totally.
And for each time period, the Maxwell song at the perfect moment, like, the music was really, really good. So that, you know, a homecoming or a dance, a high school dance, had to have good music, had to have good dance moves. I could do the dance moves.
I hadn't thought about that as an act of music supervision in a movie. Like, the soundtrack needs to be right for all 15 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was spot on. And some things were way before my time, but I still know those songs because they were in that movie. And yeah, like Light as a Rock.
There you go. Have you, as I said, host a podcast with Cheryl Swoops, one of the greatest basketball players to ever live. Have you ever asked her favorite basketball movie?
You know, I have not, and I have to ask her about that. I also haven't really talked to her about her being in an episode of Martin with Dawn Staley and Rebecca Lobo, and like that was iconic and lore of women's basketball players being in, you know, a sitcom. Like that wasn't a thing. So yeah, we got a lot to talk about. What are we doing?
Yeah,
we gotta do that in season two.
Season two. These are ready made banter questions.
yeah.
There you go. Part of the great story of the production of this movie is that Sanaa Lathan was not a basketball player, had never touched a basketball, and Gina Prince-Bythe would like really put her through it in the training to try and get this to the level of authenticity she wanted. What do you feel is Sanaa's like best basketball acting? What's her best moment?
It's definitely not the dribbling.
No.
I'll say that. it's looking a little rehearsed, a little staged.
I will say, you know what? She keeps her head up, which Omar Epps doesn't always do. He kind of like looks down.
True.
So
yes.
But
we'll give her that credit.
But
yeah,
please
for
continue.
Sure. I would say her form wasn't the iconic scene where she's in practice, she shoots a three-pointer on a fast break, she drills it, leaves her hand hanging, coach tells her, stay like that for the rest of practice. The form was great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is very much something that I look to. You have to keep it up with the wrist snapped.
Yep.
So I would give her form and her trash talking. Mm. Really good. Really, really good.
There you go.
Something I take from her game for sure.
And the first person camera work that you talked about earlier is a great workaround for not having to see the actor play basketball. And there's also like a little moment I loved where it was just like half a montage where it was like an important game for Monica, and it, like the only shot is just her sliding into the camera for a loose ball, which is kind of like you said, that's not really gameplay, but it's like really good visual storytelling with like, you know, so what if she can't? So whatever, handle's not amazing. She can slide into the camera and dive.
Which was with Gina. Like, that slide was Gina.
On the floor with her? Diving for the ball?
Yes. Yes.
I missed that.
That was her.
That's amazing.
Another little nugget for you. She had to put herself in the movie somehow. So they're both diving for the loose ball, and that's Gina and Sanaa.
How about that? Well, that's nice of the director to be like, look, I'm going to make you all do this. So I'll dive on the floor with you.
I'll dive a couple times. That had to be a couple takes too. I'm sure that was not easy.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. To not hit the camera, to stop at the right mark. To the floor burns were probably not great.
I know.
what, I feel like you made some allusion to this, Jordan, in the anniversary piece, but are there parts of your game that are reminiscent of Monica's or the archetype of player that she is?
Yeah, I think overall the type of player, the passion that she played with, I feel like that might be generic to say, but I've played with a lot of people who were very talented but did not have the same passion, the same temper a little bit, you know, trying to avoid some technicals sometimes in my day. But also just the desire, you know, the desire to be the best. I think I resonated the most with Monica when it was those clips of her in the gym by herself doing two ball dribbling drills. Like that desire to want to take Sidra's spot, the desire to be the first woman in the NBA. Like there was no doubt in her mind that was something that she was going to achieve. And I definitely resonated with that. And I aspired to be like that. You know, being a Lakers fan, growing up in Sacramento, but a Lakers fan.
Oh.
And being super involved in watching sports and also wanting to be a trailblazer for myself. I definitely can attest that those are some similarities between me and Monica for sure.
I like that. But Jordan, are you telling me that you rooted for the Lakers in the King series in the early 2000s?
Absolutely.
That's
it was
brutal.
really rough to go to school. But I came out on top. So
yeah,
it was good when the games were over.
Uh-huh.
But in those series, Yeah, I would go to school in like my dad's oversized Lakers shirts, and it was just Kings fans after Kings fans. And that's kind of where my trash talking probably really started, because sure. I was like, why would I be rooting for the losers? Like, I'm a champion. Come on. What?
Well, if you were wearing your dad's Lakers shirts to school, you weren't running from it either. You were.
Yeah, no, not at all. I wasn't ducking any smoke, especially since we would win. And yeah, after that, Derek Fisher hit that shot over the Kings. Robert Horry's big shot. Oh, man. Couldn't tell me nothing at elementary school.
I guess you're proving the point now, because I have no comeback, of course. I was curious, just briefly, when Monica turns pro in 93 and goes to Spain, there is no WNBA yet, right? The 97's the first year?
Yes.
Well, what, to your knowledge, was the landscape like for women who wanted to play basketball after college? Was it kind of overseas or bust?
Yes, exactly. I think that's also one of my favorite parts about this movie, is the historical part of it. You know, there is a part where people watching this movie now know a history of women's basketball, because you see her go play overseas. You see that conversation with Sidra where they bump into each other in Spain and they're like, hey, other women's basketball player, this is the only other place we could play. You know, the ABL wasn't something until 1996, but still this time, you know, the Olympic team with Cheryl Swoops and Teresa Edwards and all of these great women's basketball players, Lisa Leslie, went undefeated and kind of set the landscape for women's basketball in America by winning gold in the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta. And so the WNBA happened after that. Mm. But there are so many players. You think of Cheryl Miller, one of the greatest to ever play, did not play in the WNBA because there was nothing there for her. And I think this movie did a beautiful job illustrating, like, I want to play basketball. I want to play this thing that I love, but I don't want to be 1,000 miles away from home. I don't want my phone bill. I'm watching Family Matters dubbed in Spanish. Like, I don't have that sense of community, but I want to continue to play basketball professionally. And that is something that even today, in the off season, WNBA players are still facing. And so it's definitely a little slice of women's basketball history in this as well.
Next segment, truth or trivia, Jordan. This is where you, the guest, choose. Do you want to try and answer not a too difficult, but a question related to life or swirling around the movie? Or would you like to attempt a trivia question about the movie? Truth or trivia?
Oh. What does everyone else do? Do they do truth?
Everyone, or they do trivia? I would say that it's a really even split. Some people are like, I don't like trivia, and I'm very honest, I'll do truth. Or some people are like, I don't know you, Chance, and I don't trust you, I'm doing trivia.
I'm gonna do truth. I'm gonna do truth.
That's nice. I promise it's not a super hard question. do you have a sleeper pick for Women's March Madness this year?
Oh. A sleeper pick. Oh, that is a great question. I feel like, I mean, there's still a top four, like, seed, but Notre Dame and Hannah Hidalgo, my only hesitation is she's a freshman.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but they have potential to be a sleeper pick because of how she plays on the defensive end. And it's all about matchups when it comes to March. It's not about the superstar versus superstar. It's about who can guard the person the best. And Hannah Hidalgo is a sniper. She is a steal queen, but she can also get buckets too. And they are very, very well coached. So Notre Dame, I'm going to go with them for my sleeper team.
Thanks for being bold and tossing a pick out there. I hope when this episode comes out in a few weeks that you were very, very right.
Oh, no, they're bounced first round. Sorry. Oh, no.
can I force you to do one interesting trivia question too?
Please.
So I was reading part of the original script. Gina's original script is online somewhere. And in, I don't think this is in the movie, but in the original script, at the end of quarter three, when they're breaking up, the movie cuts to some news footage of a historic NBA moment that kind of like sets that breakup mood. Do you have any guesses as to what basketball event was used to kind of inflect the breakup? I can give you a hint too.
Inflect the breakup. Does it have something to do with the Lakers?
Yes, it would have been meaningful to Monica.
Magic Johnson retires.
That's it. Very good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is such an interesting, like, I guess I understand why that got cut, but on paper, that's super interesting. It's like the low moment, death of childhood. Let's cut to Magic's retirement.
Yeah. I don't think that was in the movie, but I feel like she may have said it. Or maybe it was like,
oh, or Quincy wrote her a letter when Magic retired.
Yes.
That's right.
That's what it was. I wrote you again when Magic retired. I congratulated you on this.
Yep. Yeah.
That's what it was. So good. But I would have loved to see a little montage of her being sad that her favorite player is no longer playing, going through a breakup. That's really good.
Would have been very on theme. Jordan, before I get you out of here, the end of this sports romance series is the new Zendaya tennis love triangle film Challengers. So I'm just asking everyone, is this a movie that they're anticipating at all? You just twiddled your fingers together as though maybe you are.
Well, I love Zendaya. I'm obsessed with her. I'm also obsessed with tennis. That is my new obsession in this phase of life. And I think it's like a tennis euphoria. Like, it's giving drama. And Zendaya's gorgeous. And I can't wait to see the tennis outfits. And I like that I kind of know what it's about, but I kind of don't. So I want to go into it like with eyes wide open to catch all the themes and everything that she's going to be going through as an athlete and also in like a love triangle. So I feel like it's artsy enough where they gave some nuggets away in the trailer, but they didn't give the whole thing away. And I love that.
I think you've wonderfully put your finger on a small insecurity of mine programming this podcast, which is like, will it even be a romance? I don't know. It looks like it could be a thriller or any other number of kinds of movies.
The music kind of makes it seem like it's a thriller, which is what I thought originally when it first came on. The first time I saw it, I was like, ooh, tennis murder mystery? But it kind of, who knows what it's going to be. I'm ready for it, though. I'm anticipating it.
We'll see. Thank you so much for your time. Is there anything you want to plug on the way out here? Anything you want to direct people to, Jordan?
Oh, nothing really. I had one other thought. It just came to me right now when you asked me how I look at the movie differently.
Oh, please. Sure.
Being newly married,
when
I watch how Tyra Banks was only a few weeks away from her wedding. And Monica came in with this cannonball of a reality for herself. I feel so bad for Tyra. And I never felt bad for Tyra watching this movie as a kid. But I'm like, dang, girl, deposits were paid. Yeah. Like, you're not getting that money back. You had your dress picked out. We're putting final touches on this wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And Monica did not care about it at all. And so that is something I think about now. But
that's the first time I've ever asked guests what they want to plug. And they were like, I'd like to plug the empathy of adulthood. Feeling feelings for a movie character.
That's exactly it. So much empathy. So much empathy for Tyra Banks.
Hello.
Hi.
Baby, this is Monica.
Monica? Oh, you guys grew up together, right? Well, Quincy's told me all about you.
Monica, this is Kara, my fiance.
Fiance? Wow.
Make sure to listen to Queens of the Court on Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow me on Instagram at Jordan Liggins or on Twitter at Hey Jordan R.
Amazing. Well, truly, there's no one I would have wanted to talk to with this movie about more. So thank you for your time, Jordan.
Thank you for having me. So much fun.